Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. Corey and Chad here chatting with John Rubino. If you want to follow along with what John is writing and his thoughts on markets and data, you can follow his Substack account, which we will be posting a link to below. Now, John, I'm going to combine a couple topics here, all under the umbrella of this general market rally that we are continuing to see, but has started to move a bit stronger just in the last couple trading days. This deals with, I think, the debt ceiling crisis or debate being for the most part behind us, but it isn't fully through the government yet. Also, all these Fed speakers that have come out just in the last about week or so, really reiterating the fact that we are going to have a pause in June, and then who knows where the Fed goes from there. They're leaving on the table rate hikes, but again, it's going to be data dependent, and at least this pause will be here. John, how much do you think these two stories are contributing to this continued rally in the broad averages?
Hey, Corey. Hey, Chad. Yeah. May was one of those really stupid months when everybody focuses on things that don't matter, like, you know, the debt ceiling charade that, you know, was never going to come to anything and never did come to anything. And now once that's gone, they're able to focus on other stuff. But the other stuff is also kind of bogus. All right. And it is causing a relief rally, and maybe the relief rally continues, especially in commodities, because that's where there should be a rally. But the Fed is talking about suspending temporarily, at least, its rate increases. In other words, at the next meeting, there will not be a rate increase. And the markets have been looking for something like that. Some sign that the Fed is going to stop tightening and start easing. But just stopping rate increases is not the same thing as easing, because there's so much debt out there that has to roll over still at these higher and higher rates. So that, in effect, tightens the monetary environment for whoever has to roll over their debt. And that's pretty much everybody out there now. So even if Fed stops, monetary conditions will continue to get tighter and tighter into an economy that's rolling over based on a lot of different indicators. So, I still think we have very serious economic and, by implication, corporate earning problems ahead of us, no matter what the Fed does, until they start cutting, which is a really long way off. So I think the relief rally, especially in the broad averages, is probably overdone, probably, you know, not the right way to look at things. And that is liable to play out over the next few months, especially, for instance, the next earnings season, when earnings will be impacted by tighter money and more debt rolling over and stuff like that. So I'm not optimistic about this rally continuing based on good economic fundamentals, because there are not good economic fundamentals. Now, gold and particularly silver might, you know, buck that trend. But otherwise, I think the second half of the year is going to be grimmer than the first half of the year in a lot of ways.
Well, John, when you look at the forecast for the second half of the year, all we've heard really since the end of last year was that it was going to be a tough second half of 2023. We should see a recession set in, or at least a contraction. And we are seeing some data like that in the manufacturing, or home data is rolling over, commercial real estate struggling, and probably will continue to do so. And to your point about the debt continuing to roll over at these higher rates, we have not even seen most of that process work its way through the system yet. But there's also positive data. You see things like the consumer is stronger than expected, or, you know, you see expectations from consumers still being relatively high. And all, you know, we heard a couple of years ago about all the stimulus juicing the markets and everything. Well, there hasn't been any stimulus for a long time. There aren't free checks going out to people. How are the consumers still so strong? And earnings season, while it had some peaks and valleys, depending on what sector you were looking at, it wasn't as bad as people were forecasting. And GDP has still remained at least in the 1% range, kind of trucking along in a muted fashion. It's really a tale of mixed messages right now. What would change in the second half of the year where things would get more dire? What are you looking to, or what data where you think it would cause the Fed to have to sit up and take action?
Well, yeah, there are still a lot of cross currents. It's true. There's some data out there that's not terrible. But I think a lot of that is that we raised the U.S. money supply by between 40% and 60% over 2 years during the pandemic. And a lot of that money is still kind of working its way through the economy. But There are a lot of reasons to think that the money spigot has been turned off now. And one is interest rates, obviously. Like if you try to buy a used car right now and borrow to do it, you might have to pay 10 or 12% interest. If you want to buy a house right now, you've got to pay 7-ish percent on a 30-year fixed rate mortgage versus 2.5% 2 years ago. And the number of Americans who are maxing out their credit cards is growing. Credit card debt just broke $1 trillion here. And that means a lot of people are carrying balances on which they're paying, you know, 20-23%, whatever. So those are all signs of tightening and signs that consumers are not going to be able to keep spending. So I think as that plays out, it becomes more and more obvious that the, there's still cross currents, but the biggest numbers, the biggest data series are trending in a negative direction. And if housing freezes up, if cars are hard to buy and car sales drop off and credit card debt really bites a growing number of consumers, you know, you'll see the economy slow down from here. And as you said, Chad, you know, despite all the relatively good numbers, we're only at like 1% in economic growth right now. GDP is perilously close to zero already before a lot of this other stuff happens. So I think that commercial real estate, for sure, you know, that is just brutal right now. And there's going to be massive losses that have to be taken by the investors and the bankers in the commercial real estate sector. And then you've got housing, where it's kind of frozen. You know, prices aren't dropping, but very few sales are taking place because the people who have to pay that 7% mortgage can't afford to buy houses at today's prices. But the people who might want to sell at today's prices can't really get today's prices. You know, they have to take a lower price and they don't want to do that yet. So housing especially can get frozen at the peak of a cycle, but then the dam breaks eventually. And I think the dam breaking is going to be one of the stories of the second half of this year when people do start pricing their houses to move. And that pulls the comps down for everybody else. And you see this huge amount of wealth just evaporate in the housing market. That's going to be a big deal when it happens. And I think it's right on the verge of starting right now.
So, John, you made the comment that a good economy helps markets go higher. But do we actually need a good economy for markets to go higher? Because there was a long period of time where the economy really wasn't doing much. It was in a very slow growth mode and markets just kept moving higher and higher and higher. And quite frankly, look, we had a year of bad market that just kept moving lower. And the data from really the start of that correction through most of it was quite bad, arguably worse than what we're seeing right now. So how do you balance that out where markets can disconnect, but it's also a comparison game and markets haven't even taken back half of what they lost throughout that down year?
Well, you know, there can be divergences in the short run, but in the long run, stock prices are based on liquidity and corporate profits generally. In other words, you can have weak corporate profits, but if there's massive liquidity out there, then companies can borrow at extremely low rates and then buy back their stock. And in that way, push up the stock of even a company whose earnings aren't doing so great. But neither of those is true today. You know, there's not massive amounts of liquidity available to companies to allow them to buy back their stock. And corporate earnings in the tech sector are pretty good, but in most of the rest of the economy are, you know, mediocre at best and probably headed down as consumer spending gets slower and real estate rolls over and things like that. So it could be that in the near term, equities are elevated, equity prices are elevated, but that kind of a divergence can't last for long in the face of falling corporate earnings. And I think that, you know, that's definitely in the cards for later in the year, especially if money stays as tight or continues to tighten from here. So, you know, you can have divergences like that for a while, but in the end, liquidity and corporate profits are what matters. And if both of those things are heading in the wrong direction, then stock prices kind of have to follow. So this could be one of those times when history is defied and it doesn't go the way it should. But if you look at the past and use that as a guide, then hard times for equities are headed this way quickly.
Well, speaking of divergences in the general stocks and particularly the tech stocks, John, a lot of the generalist investing community is just simply piled into the mega cap tech leadership. You know, they're piling into these names like Meta, Facebook, Google, Amazon, piling into Microsoft, Tesla, and then the AI revolution lately with NVIDIA. And I think its PE ratio is up like around 160 right now. So when you look at the PE ratios of these mega cap stocks, they're kind of divorced from what their earnings are. None of those companies had amazing earnings, and they're being priced like they're going to just keep earning for hundreds of years. It's a natural reaction to a fear and uncertainty in the market from the banking crisis we saw in March and the debt ceiling charades for people to pile into household names. But if you look at the rest of the markets, the market breadth's not that great at all. And when you look at the general stocks in many other sectors are plumbing along near the lows from the micro caps down to the financials. They're not doing as great as these mega cap tech stocks. When do you think that scenario changes? Will the market breadth broaden out and people diversify into other stocks if the Fed pauses? Or are people assuming these are safe havens, maybe somewhat on shaky footing?
Well, that's kind of a peak of a cycle that you're describing there. Typically, market breadth contracts as an expansion gets longer and longer in the tooth, and they stick with the things that have done best in the past. So a small group of stocks continue to go up, and that pulls the overall indexes up. But once that small group of stocks run out of steam, then everything falls apart. And that has happened over and over again in the last 40 years, where, you know, going all the way back to the Nifty 50 stocks in the 1970s and then tech stocks, you know, we've seen this before. And contracting market breadth almost always leads to a bear market in the end. And with tech stocks today, you know, they did have some better than expected earnings in this last cycle, but they're not immune to tight money either and falling consumer spending. The same things that can affect regular cyclical companies can also affect big tech. And this NVIDIA thing is hilarious. I actually have a bid in to short NVIDIA, just because it's ridiculous for a company that's already several hundred billion dollars in market cap to jump up to a trillion in like 3 days. That's crazy. And the artificial intelligence thing, I mean, AI is going to be huge. It's going to be a really important thing. But it's kind of in its hype cycle now, where everybody is looking way ahead to what's going to happen years and years down the road, and not seeing the valley ahead of us where AI actually costs as much in terms of overall corporate earnings out there as it makes. So it's hard to see the AI bubble being anything other than some kind of a late cycle phenomenon that blows up or along with everything else. So yeah, anyhow, long answer to a really short question, which is, does market breadth matter here? And yeah, it matters big time. This is how it works at the peaks of cycles. And it almost always leads to a bear market when things look like they do today.
Well, let's just wrap up with the commodity space, John. Over the last, I'd say, couple months, the commodities have had a mixed picture. It's hard to look at them all together because they have their own fundamental drivers. But in general, the commodities have been pulling back. And it seems like there's somewhat of a boot being lifted off the neck of the commodity sector as the debt ceiling charade is over and after, you know, the Fed is going to pause. But if so many people are worried about a contracting economy and a recession in the second half of the year, at least in this country, is it more that commodities are a global picture and so it matters more what's happening in China or what's happening in emerging markets? Or is the U.S. such a mover and shaker as the primary market in the world that if it has a cold, the commodities are going to sneeze?
Well, if we drop into a recession, and, you know, usually those things are global. If the U.S. drops into a recession, we'll buy less stuff from other countries, and that'll affect them. That's bad for commodities in general. So I think the big risk here, because, you know, the long-term stories for uranium and copper and silver and gold are phenomenally good. No matter what you pay for those commodities today, you would be happy to have done that 10 years from now. So, you know, the long-term story is great, but the next couple of years are very scary because recessions are just bad for cyclical things like silver and like copper. And I'm worried about that with my own mining stock holdings, because I think it's completely possible that we see another 2008 or 2020 kind of sharp, dramatic market break that pulls down everything, including the best commodity stocks. So that's the big risk out there. So the question is, do you want to look past that and just buy the best commodity stocks and the best physical ETFs right now, knowing that the long-term story is great? Or do you want to, you know, take the risk that you miss a big part of that run by being cautious right now. And I don't have a good answer for that. I think both sides of that equation have something to be said for them. So, you know, on my Substack, the advice I give is be, you know, super cautious, but don't stop buying the best stocks that you've discovered. You know, just buy them cautiously with lowball bids and, you know, sell put options to get a better price or dollar cost averaging or something like that. Just don't jump with both feet into something that has that big risk looming out there, no matter how good the long-term story is. So I wish I could say something more definite, but right now it seems like it could go either way in the year ahead.
Well, John, some others have postulated that it's really the time to be in precious metals more so than commodities, and that commodities will have their day, and the copper and silver, and you know, it's a precious metal, but it's also a hybrid industrial metal as well, that maybe the best policy is to be in gold and gold stocks for the monetary reasons, and then take those profits and rotate them into commodities down the road. Do you see that as being a viable strategy too, or do you think it's better just to have a nice mix because you don't really know which ones are going to move and when that big up leg is going to start?
Well, if you get the timing just right, it's definitely better to move into the first mover and then out of it and into the second and third movers later on as they take off. But I've never been good at that. You know, I've never gotten the timing right in something like this. So I would say if you feel like you can time something like that, then obviously that's the best thing to do. But I don't know what to tell you as far as the timing goes. I don't know what indicators to look at or anything because this is such a complex situation right now. But yes, you should own a lot of gold, no matter what. And there are a lot of market timing guys out there who say silver is really getting ready to take off, which, you know, that kind of contradicts the whole cyclical risk thing. But it's completely possible that silver has a big move just because it's kind of in shortage right now, you know, and it might be that higher prices are necessary to balance out a market where there's just not enough silver to satisfy everybody. So that's a valid story. That could be a reason to own a lot more silver now than you might otherwise. So yeah, there's a lot of pluses and minuses to look at out there. And what I'm doing personally, because I'm uncomfortable with trying to time all of this, is just adding a little bit to the really high quality stories over time and hoping in that way to build up big enough positions in the best, highest quality players out there. So that they weather whatever storm is coming and they really take off when the market environment changes.
Well, we'll wrap it up there, John. That's some cogent advice to just kind of average in and use the weakness as your friend to build positions in the companies that you think will weather that storm and eventually will have the most torque to the upside when the sentiment improves.
One thing, if I could add before we go,
sure.
Well, watch what Warren Buffett has been doing lately. He owns a ton of Occidental Petroleum, and its stock just got whacked lately because oil went down pretty hard. And he came in and bought some more because he understands how the company works. He knows what it's worth, and it just got put on sale. You know, something he wanted went on sale this last week, and he bought more. And I think that's a good approach for a lot of these. If you have the really high quality names and you know what they're worth, then a drop in price is not a terrible thing. You know, it gives you a chance to buy some more at a favorable price. And psychologically, that's a lot healthier of a way to be out there.
Yeah, let's follow the Warren Buffett technique, buying a quality company on sale. And if people do their due diligence in the commodity space and the resource stocks, there's definitely some sales right now. We'll keep following along with the commodity sector, with the markets, with the economy. And John, it's always great getting your thoughts. If people like getting John's thoughts, again, definitely click on the link down below. It takes you over to a Substack page. And until our next conversation, John, always appreciate you being on the KE Report.
Great. Thanks, guys. Talk to you soon.